Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This is Jay Farrow, your guest host on Atlanta Technology Leaders. I am the CIO for the American Cancer Society, and I am blessed to be here with a very special guest, one of my good friends, both in and out of the industry, and a great technology leader, Mr. Bryson Kaler, CIO of The Weather Company. Welcome, Bryson.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to give a shout out to Band of Coders who make this possible. So thank you to Band of Coders. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did have a good Thanksgiving. It was a lot of fun. We had two meals.
You had two sittings, you said?
Two sittings. We had a 12 o'clock seating and a 4:30 seating.
And the tryptophan kicked in and you were asleep till
exactly.
Saturday.
Exactly.
Naturally.
Still recovering.
Football friends and family. Unfortunately, my Georgia Bulldogs, if Mr. John Traynor or any of the other Georgia Tech aficionados are listening, you got us. But even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then, Bryson Kaler. So
that's good because I'm a North Carolina Tar Heel, so yeah. We won't talk about our football team. You know, that I mean, they're okay.
Are you going to have one? Or
it depends. It's game to game.
It's a game to game kind of thing. No, it's the Weather Company, obviously one of the most known brands in the world, one of the busiest websites or most accessed websites in the world.
I think we were number 11 last month.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you are actually, besides just the actual website, you're the fuel behind many other websites as well, right?
Yeah. So we power weather pretty much wherever you can go. So if you've got an iOS 8 device, the default weather widget is us. If you've got an Android device and you've got Google Now turned on, that's us. If you go on Google and you search and you see weather, that's us. If you've got a Microsoft device, if you've got, a Huawei device, if you have a Dell device, name it, we power it. We power 550 local broadcast TV stations around the world with their local tools to present their weather and edit their weather and all of the things that they need to present weather to their local viewers. We power airlines, energy traders, insurance companies, retailers in the advertising space with the WeatherFX platform. There's really nowhere you can go in the world, whether it's print or radio. We've got about 600 radio stations we provide weather to on an hourly basis. So we are the Weather Company.
An appropriately named organization. So obviously, given the importance of what weather does and what you guys power, uptime, data, all of those things are huge components of your job. Unpack that a little bit. Tell me about your role as CIO and where your biggest focuses are.
Yeah, so I've been there about 2.5 years, mm-hmm. and really came on board to really help turn the company into a big data technology shop. And our roots date back to the early 80s when we started the Weather Channel,
right,
which is the number one most distributed cable network in the United States. They did some amazing things with the localization capability. If you mm-hmm. watch the Weather Channel, you get your local on the 8s. That's a really unique capability. Nobody else has that capability to provide a national network with local information embedded into it at that last mile. That's been great. But we knew that we needed to expand and diversify and grow the business in other ways because, from a cable TV perspective, while that's great, not necessarily a thriving industry overall
right.
these days
right.
as people turn to other, small glass type devices to get their content. So, we've been on that transformation journey, whether it's your weather forecast or it's a weather alert, safety information is very mm-hmm. important to us.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a business-related trigger. You're American Airlines, and we run your flight operations and your flight forecasting, and we're doing that pushback. We're doing that flight plan. We're doing that in-flight turbulence. Those are real-time, things. And a plane can't push back from the gate. That's pretty important.
Yeah.
You don't get a severe weather alert to keep you safe. That's pretty important.
Darn right.
Obviously, knowing whether or not your son's going to have football practice is also pretty important.
Well, that's even more critical, Bryson Kaler. You know that. I mean, that's obviously paramount. Top of those.
So we have to stay up 100% of the time. And we really, we are in a life or death situation in yeah. many cases. And so we take that very seriously. And so when we set forth a couple of years ago to rebuild everything and kind of start over, we were in a good place because, we had kind of underinvested in the business
right.
over the previous period of time. And so when you have that opportunity to start over, and really build from the ground up, you know, you can do some great things. And so we were fortunate to be in that position. We were fortunate to have the great support of our board and our chairman and CEO. And so we've made some great investments. We've built out a completely new data platform, a completely new forecasting system, a completely new, you know, weather.com, a completely new mobile, you know, a suite of applications.
Which keeps getting better and better, by the way.
Which keeps getting better and better, and it will. We've got a long way to go, but we've come a long way.
So, yeah, you know I'm a big fan. Changing culture in IT. Now, you're there 2.5 years.
Yep.
You have a renewed focus on the business. You have a commitment by the board to invest in technology.
Yep.
Because you are a data organization.
That's
obviously
right.
With life or death type data information. What did you walk into culture-wise, and what did it take to kind of get everybody aligned around the change that needed to happen?
You know, I think when the previous world of media, especially if you look at TV, was an incredibly profitable world,
right?
For all media, you know, companies, that was a very profitable world. Those companies printed money, and it. When you have a culture that is used to that type of environment, you don't always have the sense of urgency that you need for radical change. And when those industries start to face headwinds almost overnight because of the explosion of other ways to receive, you know, content, it requires a real wake-up call to the organization. And for us, you know, it did take a little bit of time for everybody to realize that, well, this is serious. We really do have to radically change, and we have to radically change fast. And, you know, some industries, you know, you can look at the print media business. You can look at all aspects of the media business in general and see who's changing and who's not and who's doing well and with the transformations that they have to go through. We've been very fortunate that we've got a great team that has rallied around the change, has kind of decided that they really want to be part of the change. That did include, you know, turning over some of the organization, which is an unfortunate consequence. But, you know, if you're not on board with the transformation and the speed at which we need to do it, then, you know, there's obviously other great places in Atlanta you can go find a job. So
I'm a firm believer in that. Either you change people or you change people. You know, you've heard me say that before. And listen, the train leaves the station one time.
You got to be on it.
You got to be on it, and you got to be a change agent, not a somebody who's fighting it constantly. And ideally, in every organization you're going to join, and everybody's going to see that vision, catch fire, and run with it. We know as human beings that's not going to happen.
Right.
Always very, very tough. But what do you see there? What have you learned in those 2.5 years? About IT teams and how your IT team rallied around this change that you think is applicable to all CIOs? I mean, certainly, how can IT teams better serve their companies in the future?
So I'm very passionate about this, and I think that, you know, IT teams in many, many cases are underserving the companies that they work in today. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's because they haven't been asked to rally yet. Sometimes that's because they have been asked and they haven't rallied. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just confused as to what their role is. And sometimes the businesses have bypassed them and gone other places to, seek, technology, leadership, and expertise. But, you know, I think IT in general, the entire industry for a long period of time really was trying to become prefabricated. Mm-hmm. It was trying to become a world where we could be repeatable. And where we could be controlled and the outcomes could be guaranteed. And so we created tools, we bought big software packages, we created governance offices, we created a lot of overhead in IT in general to try to create and force certainty and repeatability. We created runbooks, giant big, you know, piles of paper to help people know how to do their job on a repeatable basis. The reality is that's just not how the world works, especially if you're in a case where you're going through rapid change.
Right.
And so I always look at it as, you know, I use the analogy of music. I love music. I really like live music, and I love going to live concerts.
I know you do.
And rock on.
Rock on. I know. I mean, yeah, I'm going to see, the Black Keys next week here in town.
Okay. I've got Fleetwood Mac coming up.
So nice. You can never go wrong with Fleetwood Mac.
So, but getting an IT organization to feel comfortable being on stage and being live and not being a pre-recorded mix burnt onto a CD is tough because you have to feel comfortable and you have to have the courage to go out on stage. You're going to mess up sometimes. Mm-hmm. You're going to drop that stick. You're going to drop your pick. You know, there's going to be feedback on the mic. So stuff's going to happen when you go to a live show.
But how do you recover, right?
And you got to recover. And that requires a team. Mm-hmm. So if your drummer drops his stick and you're the guitarist, what do? You play a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. You play another chord or two so that he has time to pick up his stick and recover.
That's right.
And a well-formed and a well-performing IT organization should function like that.
Yeah.
And in the pre-recorded world, everybody was just worried about their own track. I'm on this track. I'm on this track. I don't worry about that track. And to each their own. And that's just not a really great way to work. And so I really believe in the culture of live and mm-hmm. the culture of us being one team and being okay with mistakes and helping each other recover from them, learn from them, and move forward.
You know, you said something there, being okay with mistakes. And I know when I walked into ACS, and you and I have lived pretty much parallel existences the last few years, because I think we started both our current jobs right around the same time. And we both are going through these global transformations.
Right.
The culture where failure is okay, where it's okay to drop your stick, it's okay to drop the pick, it's okay to miss that riff
right.
and miss the timing.
Yep.
Was that something you walked into where that wasn't okay?
The team totally felt like it was not okay. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we had new leadership coming right. on board with me, mm-hmm. You know, a new chairman and a new CEO and a new COO, a new CFO. So we had a pretty good transformation of the yeah. top line. And we all came into it with the attitude that we needed to become more aggressive. Velocity was key. Mm-hmm. And taking risks and being agile and functioning more like a startup than a, you know, 30-some-odd-year-old company.
Right.
So it was easy for us as the new leaders. It was much harder for the teams to believe that we were serious and that it was going to be okay for them to take those chances. And
that's
so
funny.
You got to jump a few times with them and mm-hmm. say, look, I'm going to jump with you and we're going to do this together. And
I promise, come on in. The water's fine.
Yes.
And this is not a setup.
I'm not setting you up, exactly.
I want to see who the dissenters are, right?
Right.
I mean, and I had very much the same thing, and I'm very proud to say that, you know, more people get it than don't, I think.
Yes.
You know, when you build that type of culture.
You can see it pretty quickly.
You can.
You know?
You can. And you and I are cut from the same cloth in that you're not a big fan, having known you over the years, of admiring the problem forever and ever.
Right.
You know.
Let's just get on with it.
Get on with it already. I got 80% of it. We'll get the rest as we go.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 years, you've made a huge amount of change, obviously, with all the successes that you have, which we're going to get into just a little bit. With your team, and I have had the pleasure of meeting many of your teammates, and it's a very impressive group. What are you most proud of? What of all the change that you've gone through with your team and all of the things that have happened over the last 2.5 years, what are you most proud of?
The trust and the relationships that they've established across the business.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to look at, you know, someone like George Lott on my team who runs our TV technology organization,
mm-hmm.
Responsible for basically all of our broadcast engineering, all TV capabilities, all of the video ingestion, storage, and distribution, both on the digital side and the TV side. He's got a big job, you know, 100-some people on his team. You know, he is absolutely seen within the TV team as one of theirs. He's right there with them. He's always there. His whole team is there. And I think if you looked back a few years, the TV team and the broadcasting team, there was a bit more of a divide. And it was, you know, either rally and change and now be seen as truly part of the solution and being there to help. It makes me happy. I love seeing that. And I've seen that across the board in so many of the cases where you go from the, you know, having a lot of doubt in the organization as to whether or not IT is really there to actually help,
right?
To realizing, oh my gosh, we can't do this without you. That's just a great feeling. I love feeling that. It's great.
You mentioned earlier that you feel like many IT teams are underserving their organizations, mm-hmm. and I completely agree with you. And I also completely agree with what you said. You said either they haven't been asked because maybe there isn't that trust, or the business, and I hate that term, but mm-hmm. the other parts of the organization simply don't know the right questions to ask, or they don't know where IT fits in, or they've been asked and have failed.
Right.
And so after a while, you're kind of like, every time I ask you guys, you don't deliver. In this case, do you feel like now you're being asked when you're delivering, and you feel now that you guys are one coherent organization where there's this inherent trust with IT?
I do. It doesn't mean that we're succeeding on everything that we're setting forth on. We obviously have our challenges. But I feel like we're doing it in lockstep with our counterparts in the other parts of the organization. And so I do hate the IT business terminology. I look at it as we're product teams, and we're part of the product solution, whether that product's a mobile app, an API call, a TV show, or a airline aviation application. You know, we're there to be part of the product solution. So I do. I feel like we're absolutely there in lockstep. We're doing planning together. We're doing budgeting together. We're doing development together. We're doing the launches together. Everything is completely done together now, including the failures. You know, we fail together, and so not everything is perfect, and we don't, you know, do everything well. And so even when we don't, you know, we do those things together, and that's great.
Nothing builds trust more than, I think, when an IT organization looks and says, look, we're going to celebrate the successes together, but we're also going to endure the the failures together, and we'll recover together.
We don't. One thing we really don't do well on is celebrating the successes.
We don't either. Bryson, but man, I got to do a better
job. I just give myself a D minus on being able to really rally, you know, the team around. Look back on what we've done.
Yeah.
Look back on this. I mean, the changes that we have accomplished in the last 2.5 years are more than, you know, the company had seen in the previous 10. And we should be really, really proud of that. And we're just so, you know, heads down, plowing into the next
thing. Then a collective thank you to our respective teams. For those who are listening to us, we can say
a big thank you.
A big thank you to the weather team and the ACS IT teams.
Hey, neither one of us would be able to come and do this radio show today if we didn't have a great team back at the ranch doing our jobs for us.
No, I would be flipping burgers. And unfortunately, that's an insult to people who are flipping burgers, because I would not be good at that either. So I thank God every day for our great teams. So you and I both love being CIO. I think I know that about you. Mm-hmm. You know that about me. What's the hardest part about being a CIO in your mind? We could do a whole show on that.
It's a very, very difficult job, because the job in and of itself is difficult, because technology is tricky. It's not plug and play. You are creating art when you're doing technology, and there's lots of room for, you know, issues when you do that, especially on the interpretations of your art. But on top of that, we have massive budget challenges, because so many things are outside of our control. You know, I don't control the demand placed on our systems. You know, weather controls the demand placed on our systems. Right. Users control that. So there's a lot of things outside of your control that, you know, you have to then somehow try to be held accountable for. And I think, you know, the being kind of at the end of the stack, if you will, you know, even if you're involved up front, you have a lot of things in the business plans to get figured out before you can embark on the technology bits. And then the technology bits are always the thing holding up implementing the business plan.
Yeah.
So we're always the last to get started. Even if you're completely joined up, it's just inevitable that we're the last to get started. And so therefore, we're always holding something up. And so, you know, that coupled with the daily firefights that are always our problems. You know, in some regards, you can look at that, and I'm not going to be negative on it, but yeah, it's sometimes a thankless job, because you've got all of these challenges that are outside of your control, and you have, you're the last to get started, and you have firefights that you're dealing with, and you've got budgetary challenge. You've got a lot of things coming at you, but you know, you can look across the aisle at your brethren in the sales and marketing organizations, and they have to sign up for numbers. And they got to put forward a quota, and they got to hit those numbers regardless of whether or not their product was on time or not.
Yeah,
and
that's
so,
exactly right.
You know, I think, you know, you could look and say everybody's got a hard part of the job.
They do. It's but the good parts of the job, I think, make it.
I love the good parts of the job are that we get to create things.
Isn't that awesome?
I love doing that. I love being able to, at the end of the day, the week, the month, the quarter, look back and say, look at what we've built. Look at what we've created. Look at the new capabilities that we've given the organization. I think that's awesome. I also think that in technology, I have more opportunity to watch people do things that they didn't think that they could accomplish. Mm-hmm. And that just that's like my mission in life is to help people figure out how they can accomplish what they thought was impossible.
Would you agree with this statement? The best CIOs or the best C-level executives in the world are leaders first and technologists second. The best CIOs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Technology is a tool that we use in right. our job, mm-hmm. but people come first.
People process technology in that order. You might say people technology process.
I might say people technology process, but people I will absolutely
always are first.
And so to lead great people and to give them the confidence to go and try something they don't think they can do.
Right.
That's our job. And in technology, because it changes so frequently and so quickly, there's a constant opportunity to set people up for an opportunity
right.
where they don't think that they can do it because it's new. They've never tried it before.
It's changing so fast, okay? And especially, you know, even in our industry, it's changing fast. But I can't imagine how fast it's changing in your industry and what you're doing. We hear, I mean, you guys are a data organization. I can't imagine the number of transactions, and you can probably spout off some numbers and you know, make my headset explode. But did you have to do a lot of retooling skill-wise? Did you have to supplement quite a bit? Did you have a lot of that knowledge in-house already, and it was latent, and you were able to kind of lift it out? Combination, a lot of training?
You know, the biggest gap we had skill set-wise was just confidence.
Right.
I mean, that was the biggest gap, was that nobody was confident in our ability to do it.
There you go. Wow.
And so we did have to bring in a lot of kind of new leadership. Mm-hmm. Some of that was for skill set, like technical skill set, but a lot of that was just general confidence building. To go and build a platform that, you know, for us, we get to see technology all over the place. I've got a TV organization. I've got a media organization. I've got, leading website and mobile apps. I've got, the largest data APIs on the planet. We've got, we power airlines, energy traders. We see and have probably every type of technology. We do radio. And we've got it. So we do get to see a broad mix of technology. But to build a cloud-based forecasting system that had never been done, to build a data platform that could handle 150,000 transactions a second at 11 milliseconds, running globally in 4 locations, that was getting updated with about 4 gigs of data a second of new data creation out of the forecasting environment, to do that, that just takes confidence. Mm-hmm. Yes, it takes a different type of architecture and a different type of tool set, and these aren't tool sets that you go and buy. I think the entire platform is completely built and put together with open source technology. So we didn't go and purchase technology to do this. So that takes a lot of confidence, especially mm-hmm. if you have a team that is used to turning to a vendor to give you a package software solution that you just implement. To go and say, okay, I'm going to start with a blank screen and a blinking cursor, and I'm going to start from scratch. It's a whole different ballgame, and it boils down to confidence.
That's amazing. That's incredible stuff. So what excites you about where the industry is today? I don't, people who listen to this show hear me talk about SMAC and social mobile analytics cloud. You guys are obviously doing a ton in all 4 of those. Mm-hmm. The Internet of Things, of course, gets probably just as much play as all of those these days. What's coming up for you in 2015? What do you think about those? I tend to roll my eyes every time I get an email that says learn about, the latest with, quote, big data, because, I think we all define it a million different ways. But what excites you about where the industry is going, and specifically, what's coming down the pike for the weather company in 2015 and beyond that gets you excited?
I think in general, the industry, for me, the excitement is the ability to do real-time mm-hmm. data analytics, to watch the stream of data flowing through the pipes, be able to in real time analyze that and create trigger conditions off of them just makes everybody smarter. And I think there's a lot of fun with that. Whether you're a data scientist or you're a computer scientist, there's a lot of fun that's going to come and a lot of great value that'll be created by real-time kind of streaming analytics, tools and tool sets and new apps that we can all build. For us, the Internet of Things is a massive focus. I want us to be 100% accurate on our weather forecast.
And what is your what is it today?
We're about 76, 78% accurate on a three-day basis. So we're the world's most accurate forecaster today. We get measured every month by a third party. And we are, you know, light years ahead of, you know, most of the competition. And we're proud of that. And we've done, you know, we moved the forecasting environment from 2.2 million locations updated every 4 hours to 3 billion locations updated every 15 minutes. That was a step change in our ability to
look at
the, you know, because it was driven by mobile devices. So we needed to be able to give you a accurate pinpoint location at that lat long for where you were with that mobile device. And nobody had that capability. And so we built it. We're still only 78% accurate, which my meteorologist, you know, on the team think is phenomenal. And it is phenomenal. And we've come up, you know, massive percentage points in the last, you know, several years. But I look at it as, all right, but look what more we can do and what would happen if we could get to, you know, 95% accuracy.
So what do your let's talk about that a second. That's fascinating stuff. So what do your meteorologists say about that? Are they looking at you like, are you?
They think I'm nuts.
There you go.
I'm nuts. I'll say it. They think I'm nuts. And so what we're doing is we're bringing together meteorologists who are kind of atmospheric scientists.
Right.
And computer scientists, and we have to get them to talk the same language. Most weather systems around the planet are built by meteorologists who learned how to code, right? And that's just how most of this all occurred. They weren't built by computer scientists who learned about meteorology. There's a few of that, but most of it was a bunch of, you know, atmospheric scientists that just were so interested in it that they taught themselves how to code. But if you then take true computer scientists who that's their lifeblood and that's what they've always studied, and you bring those together, it's amazing what you can do. And so when you look at creating a perfect forecast, you have to have better data that comes in, you have to have better computing capabilities to churn that data, and you have to have better science and algorithms around what you're doing with that. And so there's a place for everybody to play. The Internet of Things really helps us in terms of getting more data into the environment.
Sure does.
And so that's going to enable machine learning to kick in so that we can start to say, out of all of these data sets that are out there, all this opportunity, what's valuable? Like, is a pressure sensor on my Galaxy S5, is that valuable or is that just cool? Like, does it really change the weather forecast accuracy if we have that? So we need to be able to bring in massive sets of new data types, run them against all these models, and then in real time start understanding which ones actually move the needle. So it's a great, fun computer science machine learning problem.
So as that percentage of accuracy goes up, though, besides just the real life case scenario that, you know, selfishly you think about, I'm going to the beach and I sure would like an accurate forecast, Bryson Kaler. But
put your ticket in.
I know. But you're talking about technology that can potentially save lives the more accurate it is.
So absolutely.
As that gets up into the 80s and you're starting to get more and more accurate on whether it's a hurricane forecast, violent weather, very severe systems, you're talking about potentially impacting and saving people's lives and enabling them to get out of the way sooner, keeping flights on the ground longer if they need to be, or maybe saying, hey, they're okay to take off because we are 85% accurate, 90% accurate.
Yeah, we're getting a lot better in the airline space these days around helping the airlines manage their fleets and pre-position them and post-position them. If you look at like tornadoes, you know, we've gotten so much better over the last decade around being able to provide earlier and earlier warnings. Now, it's still not early enough,
right?
But you know, if 15 years ago it was 2 minutes and now it's 22 minutes, you know, okay, that's help. That's a real good step in the right direction.
Darn right.
And so you know, if you're the American Red Cross and you're there to help from a disaster perspective, then you know the fact that we've gotten to 22 minutes means that there's, you know, hopefully less disasters that you have to help. I mean, that's our goal. And so We continue to look at how do we, you know, find better science to create better safety and better impact to people in their lives and their planning.
Awesome stuff. So you're building all of this, and it sounds like just a huge, fun challenge to navigate. Obviously, that takes talent. As CIOs, one of the biggest things we wrestle with, of course, is attracting and retaining the top talent in the industry. We're competing in a very hot market. The Atlanta market is extremely competitive. IT unemployment here is very, very low.
Yes.
People are poaching left and right. What skill sets are you in search of that are hardest to find? I mean, what's out there that you're just like, God almighty, we have to look for one of these, and it is literally a diamond in the rough or needle in the haystack?
It's across the board. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to get out of answering the question, but I mean, it's as hard to find a great sysadmin these days as it is to find a great, you know, development leader.
Totally agree with you.
And it's as hard to find a great Java developer. You could go across any of these, and I don't see a plethora of amazing talent sitting on the bench on any skill set. If I was to just generalize, though, the one thing that I need everybody to work on that's listening, that is looking for a job, is how do you become better equipped to handle ambiguity? We don't have all the answers. You might.
No, God, no. If I did, no.
But I don't.
I would sell them to you.
I don't have all the answers.
No, I don't.
At the pace we're moving, the velocity we're moving, and the change we're moving, we have to embark on projects where we don't even actually fully know where we're going to end up, but we all need to jump together and get going. And engineers just...
They don't like that.
They don't
like a one
that.
Or a zero, don't
Correct.
They?
This is not a binary equation.
It's funny. I have said to whether it's an executive recruiter or, you know, a talent strategy department, I said, look, what's the biggest... They ask the same thing that you just said. What's the biggest quality that you're looking for? And yeah, I can list off the certifications and the years of experience.
Sure.
And those are all neat. You certainly are looking for certain personality traits. But one of the most important things is how adaptable are they?
Right.
How can they thrive in an ever-changing environment? Because to your point, engineers many times are not comfortable deviating from that job description. Well, that's not what you said we were going to be doing, and I didn't realize priorities were going to change.
I was wrong.
I was wrong. Well, how could you be wrong? You're the CIO. Because I'm not a Terminator unit
right.
that you know of. And, I'm not binary, and...
Or the business changed around us, or there was a new startup
force.
That launched something
That's
that
exactly
you didn't
right.
know.
Like, I mean, new market force, economic downturn, you know, weather situation in your case, a competitor that enters the market that you were unprepared for. In our case, it's the other large nonprofits that are out in the space, but in many cases, it's the small localized nonprofits that are just as big of a competitor to us for heart, you know, for time, talent, and treasure.
Sure.
So one of those enters the market around around an area where you're used to having kind of the market share. You've got to be able to react to that. It wasn't in your strategic plan.
Got to change.
Got to change. And IT people inherently aren't very, I won't say inherently, but traditionally aren't very
traditionally.
Good at that.
Yeah.
You have a 3-year roadmap, but it said we were going to do this. Things changed.
Yeah. And being comfortable adapting, that's to me like the number one thing we've got to find, regardless of the underlying skill set.
Totally agree. I can teach the X's and O's mm-hmm. and the bits and bytes more than you can teach that mindset.
I think a lot of that comes from them having trust that it's okay.
I agree.
Right? They have to believe that, oh my gosh, did I just do a month's worth of work that we're going to throw away? And if I tell you that I just did a month's worth of work and we're throwing it away, are you going to be mad at me? Are you going to fire me? Am I going to get dinged on my performance review? And it's like, hey, look, we're all in this together. Remember that whole live thing? We're all up on the stage together.
Yeah.
And how we perform that show is how we all perform that show. And if we need to react to how the crowd is playing our songs, then let's react.
You know, all of this conversation leads me to just one particular point. Now, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, you see why Bryson was one of the winners of the CIO of the Year Award this year. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Very well deserved.
Glad to be in the club.
Yeah, it's a very exclusive club, obviously watered down by the fact that I'm part of it. But I don't know that I would win it today, but... very well deserved. You brought your son to the celebration, and it was a great moment. I have to say,
I was really happy to have Austin there. He's 11, and you know, I took him out of school, and I think he learned more that day than he probably learned the rest of the month in school.
Dad's the man. What are you kidding? Dad got to go up on stage. He's a winner.
Forget Dad. He got to hear real conversations.
He did get to hear real conversations, but he got to see you in your element. And I guarantee you, he walked home, or when he got home, he had a brand new appreciation for how good Dad is at what he's doing but what Dad does on a day-to-day basis. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, congratulations. And it was a terrific moment to watch. You know, the CIO of the Year Award, of course, is put on by the GCLA, which is an organization that is near and dear to you and I.
Yep.
And we've been members for a while. Mm-hmm. What does the GCLA mean to you, and how special is the Atlanta community?
Well, I'll take that in reverse order. The Atlanta community is amazing. Mm-hmm. We are so blessed in Atlanta. And for those that don't travel around or understand or have worked in other markets, there isn't anything like the Atlanta community anywhere else. I just am amazed by the camaraderie that exists within the CIO community, the technology community in Atlanta. And I think the GCLA is an amazing representation of that. It's the pinnacle of, you know, of getting everybody together that is like-minded from large organizations that have similar leadership jobs and responsibilities. And it's a close-knit group. And having that community to rely on to both ask questions, to get encouragement, but also to share ideas and to seek out what others are doing to solve similar problems. You know, we all get so heads down. And I try to get out of the office frequently. I try to continue to make mm-hmm. sure that I'm staying current and talking and, you know, leveraging my network to stay smart because I learn everything I learn from people around me. And so I think the GCLA is just that. It's a great learning tool because it keeps me surrounded by the same smart people that have the same tough jobs, that have the same challenges, the same demands. And so when you approach it with the like mindset, you just can learn an amazing amount.
I agree. I agree 100%. And it's evidenced by the fact that you do donate a lot of your time, both as a member, but also as a member of the executive committee. And I believe in 2015, you are member engagement vice chair. So evidenced by the time that you put in.
Well, we're going to try to continue to grow the organization.
We're 117.
I encourage everybody listening to come check us out. Come to our website.
Absolutely, yeah. GeorgiaCIO.org. And the 2015 calendar is up on the website. I'm getting a nod from Lisa, the most dangerous executive director in the business. She will come at me with the wrong end of a microphone if I screw that up. So I got to get that right. The calendar is up.
I encourage you to come. Come to one of our events. Come check it out. Come and learn, because you just don't get this type of engagement anywhere. And we're blessed in Atlanta. And so if you're here and you're not taking advantage, shame on you.
Shame on them. Shame on them. I agree. You know, the last thing I want to say, Bryson, is just a personal note. For those of you who don't know, Bryson is a great philanthropic supporter of many organizations. But I wanted to say thank you on the air for both you and your time and your lovely wife attending our American Cancer Society Birthdays Ball this year and supporting ACS and spending your hard-earned money and supporting ACS. But more importantly, being there, your presence meant a lot to me individually. But I also want to thank the Weather Company, who's been a terrific partner and supporter of the American Cancer Society as well. So thank you, and thank your company.
Well, thank you very much. It's important that we all give back, and I spend as much time as I possibly can doing that.
Absolutely, and it's very much appreciated. So with that, thank you for being here, my friend. Bryson Kaler, ladies and gentlemen, one of my best friends in the business and a darn great CIO. And the last but not least, I want to thank Lisa, who's in the room. I want to thank my folks at Business Radio X. I want to thank Kelly Eckstein. I keep using her name. Her old name, Kelly Eckstein Harris, but I'm going to say it until she smacks me upside the head. And last but not least, I want to thank Band of Coders, who make this possible. And Bobby John, I know you're listening out there somewhere. You need to be in here, man. This is where the party's happening. But thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time, and have a great day.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.